little bit of the bubbly.
All right, all right, all right. What's going on, everyone? It's your boy, Lucha Val Cisco, a.k.a. Val Cisco, and welcome to the post-show for AEW's Double or Nothing, brought to you by Elite Wrestling Audio. Of course, I'm doing this double right here, and we're going to give my thoughts and reactions to the whole show. This was a spectacle that I, as well as Jay Rant and our boy Jeremy Shit Talker as well too, have been anticipating for quite some time. I think we got bought in this week, ordered it directly on pay-per-view, and was it money well spent? Well, we're going to talk about it right now. So of course, let's get in right into it right here, because a lot to unpack on this pay-per-view. Double or Nothing, man, brought to you by All Elite Wrestling, took place, of course, May 30th, 2021. It was brought to you by The Daily's Place in Jacksonville, Florida, while the main event was primarily taking place in the TIAA Bank Field, right next to Daily's Place as well, too. So where the Jags play, that's where the main event happened, of course, with Stadium Stampede. Originally, it was supposed to be hosted in the MGM Grand Garden Arena in Paradise, Nevada, but was moved due to the COVID-19 pandemic as well, too. We're still taking precautions out there, even though people are taking masks off and vaccines are out there. However you want to spin it, however you feel about the situation, reality of the shows right now at this moment in time, they weren't ready just to hit Vegas just yet, but that will be changing pretty soon with the announcements that came tonight or last night. So let's get into it. My general thoughts first before we get into the breakdown. I was super hyped going into this. You know, I've been on and off of AEW for the past couple of weeks because, you know, just personal things with life, you know, family, taking care of things. My kid's 17th birthday just happened as well too, so I've just been a little preoccupied when it comes to the world of professional wrestling, but I love me some AEW, and although it can be a little convoluted at times, and although there may be too many moving pieces that are happening when you're watching AEW, I still feel that's very enjoyable. It does still mix the nostalgia of old school WCW with indie wrestling as well too. Hell, it gives you an ECW vibe as well. So with all that mixed up, it always really has my attention, and Double or Nothing is their premier event. They I think Cody Rhodes has stated, and Tony Khan as well too, that they want to make Double or Nothing as big as possible. Not sure if they want to make it their WrestleMania, but hell, if they want to, I can see it happening in the next couple of years, especially with everything opening up again. So my excitement level was there. Now, the matches, was I super excited with the matches and what was happening? Here and there. I thought there were some questionable matches, and I thought there were some matches that really didn't make sense. Britt Baker versus Sheeta definitely made sense. The Inner Circle and the Pinnacle match made sense as well, too. Did I want to see an Orange Cassidy, Pac, and Kenny Omega triple threat match for the AEW World Heavyweight Championship? I'm not too sure, but by the end of the night, I was sold on it. And as usual with Orange Cassidy matches, we may shit on the dude sometimes for his lackadaisical style, but it definitely worked in that match. There was a place for him in that match, and it really had the crowd by his side. So, I was, you know, my entertainment level, it was gauging from, like, hot and cold almost, like right in the middle, lukewarm. But I still was excited going into this. Hell, it's AEW, it's a pay-per-view. Let's see what went on to this. So let's get started with everything that was happening with the buy-in match. I think the buy-in match is what really sold me with Double or Nothing. You know, the buy-in match, the pre-show, if you will, it was free for people on Bleacher Report Live, I believe on YouTube, and of course, wherever you're watching pay-per-views as well, too. Double or Nothing on all pay-per-view streaming services or platforms. Also was in movie theaters as well, too, in the Harkins movie theater specifically was playing, and I was almost tempted to do that because I wanted that camaraderie. Like, I had the boys on the phone. We all live in different places, Puerto Rico, Arizona, New York. But I kind of didn't want to have that feeling with just a whole bunch of people. But, you know, I had the brewskis on deck. I had the wings on deck. You know, I kind of wanted to have that feeling for myself with the best seat in the house. But I kind of regret it, because maybe my excitement level would have went through the roof with some more people by my side, as it does with professional wrestling. Hence, let's just still talk about what we're doing right here, the buy-in match. Oh man, I was souped about this match because I'm a huge fan of Serena Deeb. I think she's done phenomenal work with the NWA and phenomenal work on AEW TV as well too. We have been very critical that the NWA Women's Championship has been showcased on a pre-show more than once already, and I think it's time for that belt to be a little elevated in a certain way, right? Like, it's kind of treated as a Women's Intercontinental Championship, even though it's and their own organization's main championship, right? But man, Serena Deeb never disappoints in matches whatsoever. And Riho as well too, to see exactly what she would bring to the table, because she has been criticized many times for I guess her frail physique and her lack of intensity in matches. Sometimes it's not as believable as people would want to be. I'm talking about you, Jim Cornette, but that dude is not listening to this podcast. If he does, you're the man. But I was super happy for this match, man. When you got to see the crowd, it took my breath away. You know, people are going to be like, oh, WrestleMania was that crowd. The crowd was ravenous for professional wrestling. No. That crowd was, yeah, I would say it was a very mixed fan base. A bunch of people that were there for the spectacle that was WrestleMania. I totally got that. And for what it's worth, it felt great, right? This was a crowd full of wrestling fans. That's how I felt. Respectful, educated wrestling fans that were there for the art of professional wrestling, to be there to be sucked in to the David Copperfield of it all. David Copperfields, if you like that commercial right there. That's a tangent for another day. So yeah, Sheeta and Rio going at it for the NWA Women's Championship. These women went to town on each other. And when I say that this was a great match, this was a fantastic storytelling match. You know, you already had like the dueling chants of Serena Deeb and Riho. Someone had to be the heel in this match, and I think they called an audible, and Deeb was being the main heel in this match, and oh boy, did she sink her teeth into this with just different things like shoving the face, slapping the face, targeting a knee or a leg, and just being relentless and ruthless with it, cheating in some aspects, or at least just taking advantage of the rules as well too. Serena Deeb as a heel works so well with this environment, especially with a white hot baby face like Riho, who was so beloved by the audience. You know, you take the casual fans out the window, Riho really is beloved by an audience. You saw that at the buy-in show. Of course, the match culminated in a submission victory with Serena Deeb, with her own tequila sunrise, if you will, tapping out Riho. But even before that, just the domination of Serena Deeb in this match, and just wasn't able to put Riho away, showing Riho that she has all this resilience in these matches, and she is like that underdog that keeps on trying to go forward and push forward and kick out at every opportunity and try to get a sneak win at every opportunity. I did like the feistiness of Serena Deeb and just the ruthlessness of just destroying her kneecap on the canvas before locking in that submission hold. I thought it was pretty damn cool. I loved it. I thought it was dope. It was a good match. Retained the championship. Crowd was ravenous. They really wanted to see some good wrestling they got in this match. So the first match of the night, man, if that didn't buy you in, the first match of the night, if not, it could have been one of the best matches of the night, and I say that for a Brian Cage match, but not to poo-poo too much on Brian Cage, but sometimes a man is, what is it, lies a feather stiff as a board when it comes to his matches. That's a pop culture reference for another day. But yeah, the opening battle between Hangman, Adam Page, taking on the Machine, Brian Cage. Taz was on commentary for this match alongside JR, Tony Schiavone, and Excalibur. This match was balls to the wall, hard hitting. This was a good old wrestling match. Hangman Page getting an outstanding ovation that night. I think this guy still is the company's future. When he eventually does win either the main title, which is AEW World Championship, or the TNT Championship, it is going to be a glorious day. The people are going to blow the roof off because this guy is so beloved. But even Brian Cage had a decent reaction as well too, but automatically, you know, the heel babyface dynamic did take over with the boos for Cage and of course the yays for Hangman Page. But these guys, like I said, went at it. Clotheslines, slams, power bombs. They came to a point where there was a top rope F5 from Brian Cage. And the story of this match was, of course, Adam Page challenging Brian Cage to a match without the help of Team Taz, aka Hook, Taz, and of course, Powerhouse Hobbs and Ricky Starks. Yeah, so this was pretty much a singles match of these guys with brute force and skill trying to outmatch each other. There was a part where Brian Cage went for the buckshot lariat, but got countered into an F5 from your boy Hangman himself. So that was pretty cool. It kind of ended where, even without his consent, Taz sent out Hook, sent out Starks, and of course they cost him the match with Hangman hitting the buckshot lariat, getting the win, and having some issues now with Team Taz and Brian Cage walking away. Biggest complaint of this match, the FTW title should have been on the line on this match. I think we've been wanting to see what they were going to do with this FTW title. It just looks like how Moose was holding the TNA championship in Impact before it was recognized. So it's like, what are you doing with it, right? It probably would have boosted the credibility of that title in AEW as well too, to have maybe Hangman hold on to it for a while, showing that he's like the tough as nails brass competitor that has the balls to have a title like that, to have intense matches like that. I think that's what it needs to be. It needs to be like that hard-hitting title, like the Never Openweight Championship in New Japan. But I digress. It was one of the best matches of the night. Next match that followed was for the AEW World Tag Team Championships, as the Young Bucks, Matt and Nick Jackson, defend their titles with Brandon Cutler by their side against the Wild Things themselves, the challengers of Jon Moxley and Eddie Kingston. Eddie Kingston coming out with a Bad News Bears jersey looked great. It did give you Major League vibes. It was pretty damn cool, though a lot of people do not like this song attached to Moxley. I definitely understand. It kind of makes the character a little different, but I think we could get used to it as long as we hear the song associated with Moxley every once in a while. I think it could be catchy, especially with the fans interacting with Moxley with this song as well too, cheering it on. This match took a while to kind of click, in my opinion. I've heard many people from the internet and just from people watching the event as well too, wrestling buddies of mine, saying that it was a slow start. And by all means, not a slow start when it comes to like the match quality. These guys just beat the shit out of each other for a while. But I feel like the clicking aspect did not hit until maybe, I want to say, 5 or 8 minutes into the match. And you know, styles make matches as well too. You have these two brawling competitors versus these two high-flying competitors as well too. But still, like, once you got past like that phase of just trying to get into the mix, the match turned out pretty damn good, with Moxley and Kingston really telling the story of injuries and lagging injuries, and the Young Bucks capitalizing on injuries like leg injuries, spinal injuries, neck injuries, and capitalizing that on the fact that these two are emotional going into this match, while the Young Bucks are just doing this just to put another notch on their belt. And this shows the creativity of the Young Bucks as well too, of not just these guys that are doing flips and tricks all the time, they systematically took out Eddie Kingston to the point where his left knee, I believe, was the one that they were using in this match, where he couldn't basically stand on his feet the whole entire match, which played huge into the finish right there. The same thing with Moxley. With the Moxley, you know, they were definitely just trying to expose different chinks in his armor as well, too, culminating in a pretty decent finish with the Young Bucks hitting the BTE trigger multiple times on Moxley, where Moxley just refused to go down. Awesome visual of him bleeding and staring at them with just a grin, like a grin of malice in his face, and hitting one last BTE trigger for the win. The Young Bucks retained the championships. Hey, like I said, through to, they had their own notorious means as well too, I will say that, but at the end of the day, this was a fun match, and we all did expect Kingston and Moxley to get these titles. I think it would have been a nice little switch for them as well too, but hey, the Young Bucks were retained. We're gonna see where that story kind of plays out in the next couple of months as well too. Not a lot of tag teams that I can say are ready for the Young Bucks to take those titles. I would have said the Varsity Blondes, but I don't think they're ready just yet. You know, you still have the presence of Jungle Boy, Luchasaurus, and Marco Stunt there, with the Jurassic Express, the Acclaimed is there, but I think you need some white-hot babyface tag teams to really go after this team, in my opinion. But we'll see what happens with that. I definitely feel like there's something still with Kingston and Moxley. I feel like there's a turn in the mist. I think that if I'm looking at this properly, it would be awesome just to see Moxley turn on Eddie Kingston this time and kind of lead that going into either All Out or Full Gear, to see if that has legs right there. I think that could be a long story of like, hey, I still remember what you did last year to me, and we still have some unfinished business. And instead of Kingston turning, Moxley's the one that turns. And that works, because we had like, what, a solid 2 years with Moxley being a babyface. I think heel Moxley would add a couple of layers to him, especially in AEW. So he feels a little more fresher. Alright, this is where things kind of went a little off track for me. As usual when it comes to this match, the convoluted Casino Battle Royal, with the winner receiving a future AEW World Championship match. The rules are very convoluted. It's their own version of a Royal Rumble with, of course, a deck of cards as like the platform for these wrestlers right here, right? So I'll go down the list right here of what we have when it comes to the groups that came out. So the first groups that came out in order, we had Christian Cage, we had Matt Sydal, Powerhouse Hobbs, Dustin Rhodes, and Max Caster coming out with the club cards. After that, for the diamond cards, you had Matt Hardy, Isaiah Cassidy, Preston 10 Vance, Nick Camarado, Serpentico. For the hearts class, you had Brian Pillman Jr., Griff Garrison, Colt Cabana, Anthony Bowens, Penta El Zero Mieldo, and of course for the spades, we had Mark Quinn, Jungle Boy, Aaron Solo, Evil Uno, Lee Johnson, and for the Joker, the mystery opponent that was coming out into this, last but not least, Leo Rush. Very convoluted match still. I know they've been trying to make this a main staple for Double or Nothing, but I just feel like this just does not click because the format of the wrestlers coming out all together in a way. I mean, this time they kind of separated them, but it just felt weird in a way. It just felt like we're just gonna give everybody an entrance music, and it doesn't matter how long the other person comes out, we just want to give them a moment. But I'm not a booker, so what do I know, right? I just felt very convoluted a tad bit. Special moments in the match. You know, Penta with his Joker outfit, even though he was not the Joker card, was pretty fun, but he had a whole bunch of, like, a deck of cards surrounding his mask, so that was pretty cool. Very Joker-esque, and it was nice to see Penta. He was nice to see a pretty good star in this match right here, which I feel like this Battle Royal needed some star power. Max Caster's rap, basically, you know, commenting on Christian needing an edge to, you know, be something in his career, yada yada, making fun of Matt Sydal slipping off the top rope, and a couple of things of that nature. Like, it was funny, but I think we've seen Max Caster a little bit better when it comes to these rhymes. 10 being an unstoppable force, that was pretty cool to see as well too. That's really about it. I think, you know, Lio Rush coming out, he got a decent ovation, but, and he got like, you know, 30 seconds of time to, you know, put his shit in the ring, but I don't know, I just feel like Lio Rush is in the wrong organization. I think he would have been 10 times better in Impact Wrestling. I think the X Division needs it. I think him, you know, El Phantasmo and Josh Alexander and TJP and all the dudes that are in the X Division right now can really tear the house down and bring it back to prominence like it was from like 2002 to 2008, of that just killer squad of elite cruiserweights or light heavyweights or X Division stars from that generation. You know, he would have been fantastic there. Not to say that he won't go there, you never know what can happen, but he does feel a little out of place in AEW. He's great on the mic and he's a great wrestler as well too, so maybe they have some plans for him. And AEW, you know, we tend to think, you know, of the WWE style that, you know, well, you need to be a big guy to succeed in this organization. And, you know, like our boy Jeremy likes to see big dudes in the heavyweight title. You know, the word all is in All Elite Wrestling. It's all inclusive, right? So they make sure to, you know, give opportunities to people like an Isaiah Cassidy for that heavyweight spot, or at least the world champion spot. So I definitely get it, and you could definitely put Lio Rush in that mix if you treated him as serious as Orange Cassidy, or even the winner of this battle royal, which was Jungle Boy. Now, I love the reaction we got. You know, the final two was definitely Jungle Boy and Christian Cage, and this definitely was a match that you could have, you know, saw the results. Either one of these two were going to win because they're fan favorites. It would have made sense for Christian Cage to win because it would have been a nice little draw for a Kenny Omega versus Christian Cage feud. I think there's some legs for that. Jungle Boy getting another opportunity for a title. I feel like we've seen this already a couple times, where Jungle Boy is either the last participant in the Battle Royal or at least wins it and gets a shot at the title as well too. And it's not that I don't like the outcome whatsoever, because I think Jungle Boy, you know, Mr. Jack Perry is a phenomenal wrestler, and I think this guy is another future star, if not a star in AEW. But did he need this right now? I don't know. I really don't know. I don't think his matches, when he ever challenges for a championship, are bad whatsoever. I think he pulls the audience in like he did that night as well too. You had everyone singing, you know, Jungle Boy and Tarzan Boy and all that stuff, but was it needed? We're going to get to see this match happen in a couple of weeks as well too, as they announced at the end of the AEW show, but I don't know. I feel like this is another person for the champion just a defeat, just to have there, and I feel like this spot could have been a little bit, I don't know, with more gravitas, or maybe launch somebody else. Like, it would have been good to see, I don't know, maybe a Brian Pillman Jr., if you just want to give him like a little bit more of like a incentive, powerhouse Hobbs, if you will. Maybe someone not left, maybe a Max Caster could have been fun for this match, winning this. He had the crowd by his side. Maybe a Pentagon. You know, Pentagon was prime for this as well too, and, you know, outstanding matches, barn burners like Penta versus Kenny Omega could steal the show as well. But hey, Jungle Boy getting a moment right here in front of the Ruckus crowd, that was cool. Let's get into the next match of the night right now. Kind of keep on going down the rabbit hole, if you will. Next match of the night, Cody Rhodes with Arn Anderson taking on Anthony Ogogo with QT Marshall. This match had a lot of hype. A lot of hype. You know, the whole America versus, you know, England scenario that they were trying to conjure up. Anthony Ogogo put in a big spot right now. You know, this guy, you know, you know how they have in WWE where it's like the Undertaker match. Well, in AEW is kind of like the Cody match, and it's supposed to be a sign right there that this match is like a premier match on the card. You have Cody Rhodes always giving great performances and always giving great promos to get you into a match right here and suck you into it. It's just, does he have the right dancing partner to make great matches? And this match right here, I don't feel like it was all cracked up that we wanted it to be. Entrances are great, you know, Go-Go coming out with, you know, the Union Jack flag was pretty cool with, you know, of course, QT Marshall on his corner. And then, of course, Cody Rhodes coming out to, you know, his original theme song with the American flag in the background, you know, coming out looking like All Might from My Hero Academia, like George Mother Flippin' Washington with like a red, white, and blue, you know, jacket and everything just screaming out America, you know, saying with Justin Roberts announcing him as the grandson of a plumber, the son of a common man, what was it, something, the father to be, the American dream, Cody Rhodes. That was pretty fun to see that. You saw the intensity in the crowd, was so happy just to see Cody Rhodes out there. You definitely got the USA chants from this Florida crowd as well too. But as far as the match goes, the match went and it was just a decent match. Like, this is very much like an AEW Dynamite match, hell, maybe even an AEW Dark match. Like, maybe it's just me. Like, you know, I did hear that, you know, Go-Go has some lingering injuries going into this match, but this match wasn't the best. You know, Go-Go with a couple of, you know, shots showing his boxing skills and, you know, rib shots, liver shots, which was cool and things of that nature, but nothing really special coming out of Anthony and Go-Go, which I feel this was a discredit to him, because you could have built a humongous star, in my opinion. I think, you know, you need, you know, British stars like a Drew McIntyre as you have on the WWE. You could have had your heel version right here, you know, but I just felt like this was more of a showcase to see if a Go-Go could hang in the limelight. And did he fail? Not necessarily, but he just performed below average in my opinion, while Cody barely didn't help either. I feel like Cody could have done more in this match. This was very much a paint-by-numbers match, Cody Rhodes getting the win with the Vertebreaker, not even the Crossroads, with the Vertebreaker, which looked a little awkward as well too. Felt like the match could have went on maybe 5 more minutes longer, and ended quicker than imagined. So Cody Rhodes gets the win. Crowd leaves happy with that. What does this mean for Anthony Ogogo? I don't know, but I hope that there's more legs to this story, especially with the factory involved as well too, QT Marshall. We're gonna have to see, but a little anticlimactic for my taste right there. The following match right here was a match that people weren't really invested in, and I know our boy Jay Rance was. But, and that surprised me because he's very critical on both of these wrestlers. But this is for the AEW TNT Championship as Miro defends his title against the Hungry Lance Archer. So this match, you know, the hype was kind of there. But I definitely feel that this match didn't need to happen, or at least the opponent of Lance Archer didn't need to happen as well too. I understand they have a lot of investment in Lance Archer, but I feel like they're just booking him in weird ways. Like, you know, me and Jay Rance keep on talking about this guy should be having the FTW title and breaking people in half the time, you know, having these barbaric matches or these brawls like he likes to have. Like that, him, Brian Cage, Hobbs, that's the title for them right there. Like, go at it, beat the hell out of each other. And that's exactly what happened in this match. These guys were beating the ever-living shit at each other, and it was a fun match going back and forth, hard hitting, tit for tat, choke slams, belly to belly suplexes, things of that nature, outside the ring, inside the ring. This was a very good match, a hard hitting 80s style match. I loved it. Very, very brawler-esque match. But the culmination of the match, a little anticlimactic as well too, in my opinion. We saw Jake Roberts come out with what assumed was a snake inside the sack. Miro takes out Jake, takes the sack, and in a in unison as the crowd booed at Miro. Miro freaking tosses the would-be snake inside the sack outside, I think almost to their stage. He just launches this shit right across from the ring to the stage. We got a whole bunch of boos from the audience. That was hilarious in my opinion. We got to see Miro force Archer to pass out to the game over and retain his championship. So it kind of hurt Lance Archer in my opinion. You know, Archer is a guy that should be a little bit more protected in these matches. You know, maybe getting jumped and getting the pin. But for him, you know, yeah, the argument is he passed out. But still, like, I don't know. I expected a better finish to come out of Lance Archer to feel a little bit more saved, in my opinion. But Miro is still booked as a dominant, ruthless champion. And that's cool. That's good. We need that right there. It's just, who is the next person to take that title off of him? I feel like you need to build somebody that's white hot, that people are rallying for. And I could think of a couple of people. But right now, I'm just enjoying Miro being his old Rusev self and just killing people, because that works for me. The intent. The city is there, the craziness is there, I love it. Alright, let's get into this right here. This match was another match that we were all anticipating. This match was for the AEW Women's World Championship as Dr. Britt Baker, DMD, with Reba Rebel, taking on the dominant champion for a year, Hikaru Shida. And I gotta say, big match feel right here. Especially for Britt Baker coming out to an enormous reaction, an enormous, enormous ovation from the audience. Having awesome ringing gear as well too, with her Scott Hall inspired gear with the blood just dripping down the black background in her gear. Even her entrance video had blood coming down as well too, especially from her bloody exchanges with Hikaru Shida and Thunder Rosa as well too. So this was a very interesting match right here. Big fight feel. Shida coming out all white as well too, coming out to a decent ovation. Man, this match happened, and I will say this wasn't a pretty match. I don't know if it was just something didn't click. I don't know if somebody was injured. I don't know if just things were not crossed the right way. Yeah, I just don't know what happened in this match, but I feel that it was a very physical match. Forearms, kicks, you know, punches to the face and things of that nature were happening, but everything just felt slow. Like, the moves were happening, but there was no intensity behind them in some ways, or I just feel like there were spots that were missed, and at times the crowd was really trying to get behind both of these wrestlers, but the wrestling itself, I'm not sure what was happening. I'm not sure the story that they were trying to tell. It did get better within, you know, I want to say the 8 to 10 minute mark, in my opinion, because this match was about 17 minutes. But yeah, it did pick up. It went a little bit more submission crazy, submission heavy from Britt Baker, of course. Shida as well too, with her submissions, like the stretch muffler as well too. Shida being a little bit more aggressive at that side, trying to hold on to her championship at any means necessary. Britt Baker as well too, being you know notorious in her ways. You know, it was a good match. There was a spot that I just did not like, where you had an involvement of Reba Rebel. I guess the intention was that, you know, Britt throws Shida to the ropes. She's hanging on the ropes, and Rebel was supposed to clock her with the crutch that she has right now. Of course, the tides turn, the tables turn, if you will. Ooh, how the tables turn. Britt gets on the ropes, and it's a miscalculation, and Rebel Reba hits Britt with the crutch. But here's the thing. It's in front of the referee. Like, the referee's seen all this, and I'm like, huh. Well, that happened, and this is not a no disqualification match, and this is not a any kind of means like match for disqualifications would be paused in a way. But that happened, and the referee just let it go. I'm like, I get it. You got to call audible. You know, this is a championship match. You probably know the finish already, so, you know, let it slide. But it just felt so weird to see that, right? In front of the referee. At least, you know, something could have happened where the referee was taken out of action, and that happened. But that was just my little tidbit right there. This all culminates with Sheeta still trying to put away Britt Baker. Britt Baker will not get pinned, will not go down. Britt finally gets her submission, which is like a version of the Rings of Saturn in a way. The lockjaw, there you go. She puts her glove on, her mandible claw, her glove, if you will, her Mr. Socko, and gets it in Sheeta's mouth. She gets it locked in, Sheeta taps, and the crowd goes crazy as the coronation of Britt Baker finally happens as the face of the women's division in AEW. And no lie, Sheeta has been a great champion from a wrestling standpoint. It's just from an entertainment standpoint, that's what was lacking. And because of that, I think that's why you saw people clamoring for a new champion. It's not that they don't respect Sheeta, because they got a huge thank you Sheeta chant afterwards, but I think we all just needed everything to click. And I wish we would have had a better match with this too, for this title change to happen. But hey, Britt has a title now. She has the chops to really talk a good game. She can wrestle a good game as well too. I just think she needs the right dancing partner. And there are plenty of people right now that she can go against. You know, your Chris Statlanders, your Red Velvets, you know, your Shaunas of the world, Abaddon. You know, a lot of people, Riho, there's a lot of people that she can go against that she could be a little more heelish in these matches. And I cannot wait to see what's in store for the AEW Women's Division. I think we're on the right track right now. And let's see what happens. Britt Baker, DMD, your new Women's Champion. All right. Next match of the night. Let's keep on rolling. Darby Allin and Sting taking on Ethan Page and Scorpio Sky. This is supposed to be Sting's first real match in front of an audience as well, too. You know, bell-to-bell match in at least 6 years, as they said. You had the whole video package of Sting, of course, in the car saying it's showtime, driving off. You have Darby Allin coming out with his makeup, Sting coming out with him. The snow, everything's out there. Ethan Page and Scorpio Sky come out together in matching trunks as well, too. I don't know how I feel about this match. I have my opinions on this match. My opinions, Ethan Page and Scorpio Sky, should that be a thing right now? No. Ethan Page left Impact Wrestling to be a single star. That didn't happen. You know, Scorpio Sky left SCU to be a single star. That didn't happen. They got back into a tag team in a way. They like to think of themselves as singles wrestlers teaming up with each other, which is cool, but essentially, Creative had nothing for you, so you're in a tag team. This is a huge spot for them against Sting and Darby Allin. You know, a lot of eyes on them, especially with the promos that they've been cutting, which has been excellent. But at this time, I'm kind of tired of seeing Darby Allin in these like matches right now. I'm kind of tired of him with Sting. I think if you're doing something with Sting, leave Darby out of it now. And same thing vice versa with Darby. I think we need to separate these guys. I think they gave us some awesome moments so far, but we don't need them as a tag team. Like, I'm scared they're going to put these two as a tag team against the Young Bucks one of these days, and I don't think we need that. Oh, Lord, I don't think we need that whatsoever. But, hey, we got the match that we did, and it was a good match as well, too. You know, we got to see Sting wrestle, did a dive from the stage as well, too, which was pretty cool. Got the crowd going crazy right there. You know, the OG, you know, WCW, NWA fans were getting their fill tonight. That night, excuse me. Ethan Page looked great. Scorpio Sky looked great. They decimated Darby Allin. They, you know, destroyed Darby Allin throughout this match. Darby Allin was very given in this match. A old Bam Bam Bigelow Spike Dudley spot where Ethan Page grabs Darby Allin, gorilla presses him, and runs from one side of the ring to another to toss Darby Allin inside the crowd. That was a great, great moment. The crowd that he tossed him into was Darby Allin's family as well, too, and friends. So that was fun. There was even parts where count-out was about to happen with Darby Allin on the floor and Sting basically picking up Darby to throw him in the ring. But he, in an act of desperation too, he didn't know what to do because you have the Wolves essentially in the ring, waiting for Darby, saying bring him in, I'll just throw him out again, and Darby looking like he just can't even move, and Sting almost drops Darby, says, you know what, we're gonna call audible, I don't want you to get hurt, son, call it a day. But Darby makes his way back into the ring, fights off Paige, tags in Sting, chaos happens, we get a Scorpion Deathlock applied, which was a pretty cool moment right there. We haven't seen that in a while as well too, like in a match with Sting, it looked perfect as well too. Sting was hitting all his beats from the Stinger splashes, all the moves that Sting likes to do from the chops and whatnot. It culminates with Darby Allin taking out Ethan Page, Scorpio Sky trying to go for his slingshot cutter but gets reversed into a Scorpion Death Drop, and Sting gets the win. I could have swore Darby was a legal man, but I'm not too sure. Maybe somebody could correct me on that one, because I believe that's the reason why the tap out didn't happen in the first place, but I could be wrong. But Sting and Darby get the win. Did they need the win? Not necessarily. I kind of just feel for Ethan Page and Scorpio Sky. I definitely know that they'll recover after this, but this could have been a huge win for them. And it could have just planted seeds for the eventual breakup of Darby and Sting. I think that would have worked a little bit better. All right, so that happened right there. Then we get to the main title match of the night. Before that, it was announced, a couple of announcements happened. A couple of cool ones, in my opinion, as well, too. First and foremost, we have Mark Henry joining AEW. Yes, World's Strongest Man Mark Henry joins AEW, and he's going to be the correspondent for AEW's new show, Rampage, that's supposed to be happening. And, of course, he's going to be a head coach as well, too, for AEW. So that right there, pretty damn dope, in my opinion. We got a couple announcements for our new shows coming up, such as All Out, which would be in Chicago September 5th. So that will be good, with the tagline, where champions are made. So that's going to be pretty cool. And we also had an announcement for Full Gear, which will be November 6th. And that would be from St. Louis as well, too. So that would be interesting as well, too. St. Louis getting some AEW action right there. Maybe we'll get some Randy Orton, since that's his home state right there. But home city, home state, right? So those were announced. We got to see the title main event, which was for the World Championship, Orange Cassidy and Pac take on Kenny Omega for the title in a triple threat match. Orange Cassidy gaining an awesome ovation, Pac getting a decent ovation, and Kenny Omega getting a pretty damn good ovation as well too. Like, everybody was psyched for this match, and this match happened, and it was balls to the wall. I thought this was a great match. As much criticism as I was giving this match for Orange Cassidy, they sold you on the fact that Orange Cassidy was going to win this match. Hell, they even sold you on parts where Pac was going to win this match. Different callbacks to back in the day, like when Pac beat Kenny Omega. And I believe All Out with the Brutalizer. They have in the same position, reversing the One-Winged Angel, and having that moment where Kenny Omega was about to tap out. You had parts where Orange Cassidy was getting the momentum throughout the whole damn match, and the Orange Punch with the Beach Break and whatnot, and near falls coming out of that. Omega as well too, this was spectacular moves as well too, from like the Tiger Driver to the Trigger City, as he likes to put it as well too. Like, these guys were doing their best to put on one of the best triple threat match that you never wanted, but you finally got. That's how I took this match right here. It kind of culminated with Orange Cassidy getting the advantage in this match, looking to put away Kenny Omega. Don Callis comes out, who was originally on commentary, getting worried, comes to the match, pulls a referee out. From there, we have everything going crazy with the referee being taken out by Kenny Omega, Callis giving Omega every single championship out there to use on either Pac and Orange Cassidy. every single title is used, from the TNA title to the Impact World Championship to the AAA Mega Championship. Last but not least, the AEW Championship. Orange Cassidy just does one more rally to try to fight back. Almost goes for a pin, but gets reversed. And with a crucifix, Kenny Omega gets a sneak win and celebrates with the whole Elite. You know, Jackson's come out, hell, even the Good Brothers come out as well too. Don Callis comes out to celebrate, and it's just a huge ordeal right there with Kenny Omega and all the gold leaving once again in notorious ways. So I found that pretty, I mean, we all knew that Kenny Omega was going to leave this match with the championships. It was just how, and I felt like this is good. This is a good way for Omega to get more heat. Like, the whole crowd was saying, fuck you, Kenny, fuck you, Don, throughout the whole match. So I found that pretty damn good. And Kenny Omega needs that troll heat. He needs that troll heat if he's going to be this belt collector. I know we have a lot of issues, me and Jay Rance, when it comes to the belt collector gimmick, because I don't feel that certain companies are getting what they need out of this. Like, Impact, what was Impact getting out of this besides maybe Kenny Omega coming up? We need something a little bit more credible, in my opinion, you know. But we have some matches set up for Kenny Omega. You know, we have Against All Odds, Moose versus Kenny Omega coming. That's gonna be interesting. Andrade taking on Kenny Omega for the AAA Mega Championship at Triple Mania. That's gonna be great. I believe, yeah. And then you have Jungle Boy awaiting Kenny Omega as well too, in 2 weeks as well too, on Dynamite. So that's really interesting as well. So Kenny Omega has his hands full. I'm not sure if he's going to go for any of the titles at this moment in time. You know, we had, you know, of course, the New Japan IWGP World Heavyweight Championship vacated by Will Ospreay because of injury, quote unquote injury. Could be injury, could not be injury, I'm not too sure. That's still up in the air. But, you know, New Japan Pro Wrestling, they're already made plans. They're saying, hey, you know, we're having Shingo take on Okada for the title as well too. I know Ibushi and Naito in the mix as well too. I was hoping to see if we were going to get some inclusion of Kenny Omega being the belt collector, but it does seem like they're going in their own direction for that. So I'm not too sure if the belt collector gimmick is still going to be a thing, but there's still other places to go. You know, Ring of Honor, MLW, we'll see what happens there. We will definitely see. But Kenny Omega coming out of this, Orange Cassidy looking like the biggest star though. Orange Cassidy, if he wasn't made already, he was definitely made with this audience. They wanted Cassidy to win so bad. So, like I said before, Lio Rush, Jungle Boy, I know people don't like the fact that they're small dudes going for the world title, but hey, All Elite Wrestling, all inclusive, this can happen. It could happen. It very well can happen. You look at a person like Darby Allin, as long as you have the charisma, as long as you have the wrestling ability, and as long as you can draw an audience in, anybody can be champion in this organization, in my opinion. And then the main event. The main event of the evening was the Inner Circle taking on the Pinnacle in a Stadium Stampede main event match. Whew. This match was everything and then some. It was fun, it was freaky, it was campy, in all the right reasons. Yeah, you know, MJF coming out in a limousine, and, you know, Street Fighter clothes, you know, jeans and tank top, and of course, Argyle knee pads, which was hilarious right there. Calling out the Inner Circle by himself. Inner Circle come out, and they are rappelling off like the stadium Titantron on top of the stadium, which was crazy, coming out to Judas, and it was just an awesome visual. Looked a little scary, especially parts with Jericho just flying down like very fast, but they had a great time doing this. Everyone looked like badasses coming down. They had, in my opinion, the Warriors inspired outfits on with like jeans and just vests. The vest had like the Empire State Building in the background, which was pretty cool as well too. Of course, a couple of them were like modified, like Santana Ortiz had the Puerto Rican flag around the Statue of Liberty's head, which is pretty cool as well too. Gotta rip on Boricuas out there. But this was crazy, and of course everyone just separates into their own little rivalry, if you will. You had MJF and Jericho being the ever-living shit out of each other, from like the limousine to the office rooms inside the Jaguar Stadium as well too. Awesome commentary. Like, the commentary from both of these guys were just hilarious, calling each other idiots and son of a bitches and all that stuff. fun little gags as well too. Like, this was a very fun, entertaining match. You know, you do sidebars from like Sean Spears and Sammy Guevara. Sammy Guevara looking for Sean Spears in the background. Hilarious, you see Sean Spears in a cinematic moment that I need to see once again. It's just Sean Spears and the camera focuses on him, the lights go on, he's just banging a chair on the floor. I swear to God he was gonna say Warriors come out to play. It would have been so cool if he said like Inner Circle come out to play as he's banging the chairs, and he's in a room of just at least 1,000 chairs around him stacked against each other. So that was a cool visual to see. You had FTR chase down the Inner Circle with their truck as well too. They get into in the backstage area. You have Santana and Ortiz looking for FTR. They find him in this weird club S scene, which was funny as hell because there was like maybe 5 people there drinking. A DJ. And then they do the spot on lights on Tully, Dax, and Cash, and oh boy, like the purple light on them and like the trance music in the background. It's just a visual to see. They get into a brawl, of course. Things are happening. They're throwing glass at each other, bottles at each other. Like, they're literally beating the shit out of each other in this match. And of course, the music stops and they zoom in on the DJ. And of course, it's Conan. And I'm getting hyped because, of course, you know, the LAX connection, as always, with Santana and Ortiz. But the little interaction with even Tully and Conan, which I thought, like, yes, let the old man beat the shit out of each other. This is what I was there for. This is what I'm here for. So that was fun. Wardlow and Jake Hager, hilarious, just Godzilla versus King Kong brutes beating the hell out of each other. I love this little matchup because it's just like Hager with just screams like and Wardlow matching it as well too. They beat the shit out of each other until they get into a meat locker. They lock each other in the meat locker, and it's hilarious because, like, out of a goddamn movie, fucking Wardlow takes an ice pick, or not an ice pick, an icicle from the meat locker, uses it as a knife to try to shank fucking Hager. Just all out wars happening back and forth. They cut back to MJF and Jericho fighting through the coach's room. There's a spot where MJF throws a punch, Jericho ducks, and he hits a Shad Khan mannequin, I believe, or a poster board. It's hilarious because that's Tony Khan's father, and Jericho goes, "Oh, you should have done that," or something like that, or "You're in big trouble now," or something like that. The crowd's just having a great time with this match. There's no boos happening whatsoever. They all start trying to kind of get into the audience again, which I found pretty cool. You know, the great spot with Jericho and MJF, where he just power bombs him on, like, by the bleachers onto this, like, table, which looked a little dangerous, because I'm like, oh, MJF, dude, one bad move, he could fall off this shit. But that was a nice little visual to have in front of the audience right there. It kind of culminates down to Sammy Guevara and Sean Spears getting into the ring, battling. Sean Spears hitting Guevara many times with a chair. Guevara does not give in whatsoever. He finally gets away to take the advantage, nail Sean Spears, hits the 620. The 620 splash, and he gets the win in the ring, with Sammy Guevara getting the win for the Inner Circle. The Inner Circle does not break up. They stay as a faction, and the feud continues. You know, at first, I was like, this was tailor-made for the Pinnacle to run roughshod all summer against, you know, anybody, but I kind of like that the Inner Circle are not broken up just yet. I think there's more legs for this feud. I think I want to see a one-on-one matches now. I want to see a Jericho and MJF again. I want to see a Spears versus Guevara. I want to see Wardlow and Hager again. Hell, I want to see a tag team match with Proud and Powerful and FTR. I don't think we have that as well, too. Like, these are matches where we need to see. And if this plays out throughout the summer, and maybe culminates at All Out somehow, I'm happy with that. That works right there. As long as the Pinnacle do get the win at the end of the day, because I do feel like they're the faction to lead AEW for this year and next year as well too, then we're good there. But I'm happy with this decision. Great ending right there, where you had all the Inner Circle celebrating inside the ring, flames, pyro in the air, Judas playing, the crowd singing, the crowd leaving happy. Great night right there. So, how do I feel about this whole event as a whole? Man, oof. Alright, let's just break it down right here. Let's give our ratings, let's slap the turnbuckles. From a 1 slap to a 3 slap right here. How do I feel about the turnbuckle slaps? I'm gonna give this a 2 turnbuckle slaps. Being a little harsh right now. Maybe, that might be... Yeah, no, that sounds right. 2 turnbuckle slaps right there. I thought that, you know, the main event was great. The first match was great. I thought there was definitely some spectacular moments that happened. But a lot of times, I did feel like there was some sloppiness, whether it was inside or outside the ring. I felt like the Casino Battle Royal didn't do any favors to anybody besides Jungle Boy. I feel like Leo Rush wasn't buried, but his moment was easily forgotten. I feel like the Sting match didn't need to happen. The Britt Baker match could have been 10 times better, and I just felt like it did not live up to the hype. I think the reaction was there. Like, you look online right now, there's reactions, like Avenger-level actions, reactions to Britt Baker winning this from, like, the Harkins theaters or theaters all over the world or whatnot, so that was cool. The desired effect was there, but the match itself wasn't that great. I felt like the tag team match was a little slow as well, too. But there's some great spots. Like, the main event was fantastic. The world title match was fantastic. The crowd was fantastic. The pre-show match was fantastic. You know, like, there were some good moments in this event. But I can't say it was 100% great. I can't give it a 3 slaps. I can't give it 3 slaps whatsoever. I can't even give it 2.5. I gotta give it 2. Wasn't terrible. Wasn't great. It was right in the middle. It was fun. But it left me wanting a little bit more from this whole event. Like, the Anthony Ogogo match, I just felt like it wasn't a flop, but it needed to be better. So hopefully we'll see what happens right now. You know, we have more AEW television. We'll see what happens in the next event for All Out, because that's the next one coming up. Kenny Omega still being a traveling champion. Britt Baker is a champion. Fun little match right there. Guys, that's really about it right here. So I'm out of here. Lucha Val Cisco on Twitter. Lucha Val Cisco on Instagram. Elite Wrestling Audio on Facebook. EWA Podcast on Instagram, EWA Podcast on Twitter, and Elite Wrestling Audio is on all podcast platforms, from iHeartRadio to Google Podcasts to Apple Podcasts to Pandora, Spotify, you name it, we're on it. Please rate us, review us, let us know how we feel. Let me know how you guys felt about Double or Nothing. Put it in the chat on the Facebook group or Instagram group or Twitter as well too. A little bit more Twitter interaction would be fantastic. We're still trying to work that out. Gotta be a little bit more, I guess, aggressive on Twitter. That's just not my flow. We flow a lot different over here. We roll by the beat of our own drum over here in EWA. And yeah, for Jay Rance as well too, please hit him up as much as you can as well too, on the Twitter, on the Instagram, at the Sun Eater UA one. You can also hit up his podcast that lacks switching as well too. Our podcast, The Kimura Chronicles, which we talk about MMA all day, every day. That should be coming up this week as well too. Just for news and highlights and getting ready for the next fights as well too. The Kimura Chronicles, TKC Podcast on Instagram, TKC Podcast on Twitter, and The Kimura Chronicles on Facebook. That's out there everywhere as well too. And Pop Culture Fanatics, where we talk about everything from My Hero Academia to horror movies to just gossip about pop culture as well too. Music, craziness, politics, we're all in there. Pop Culture Fanatics, PCF Podcast on Twitter, PCF Podcast on Instagram, and Pop Culture Fanatics on Facebook as well, too. All those podcasts are everywhere, guys. I am out of here. I'm taking care. Happy Memorial Day for all you guys out there. And enjoy, and let me know what you think. Take care. Bye-bye.